This is The Guardian.
Today, who gets to say what's extreme and what isn't? Apparently, Michael Gove. What's wrong with the government's new definition of extremism?
Today in Focus is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honour of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organisation, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat, but Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/earthday this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
Right, we come to the statement. I call the Secretary of State, Michael Gove.
It all sounded so reasonable.
The United Kingdom is a success story. A multinational, multi-ethnic, multi-faith democracy, stronger because of our diversity. But our democracy and our values of inclusivity and tolerance are under challenge.
On Thursday, Community Secretary Michael Gove stood up to announce a new definition of extremism to decide who the government could and couldn't engage with.
The proposed definition will hold that extremism is the promotion or advancement of an ideology based on violence, hatred or intolerance that aims to negate or destroy the fundamental rights and freedoms of others, or undermine, overturn or replace the UK's system of liberal parliamentary democracy and democratic rights, or intentionally create a permissive environment for others to achieve these results.
Gove said it was about getting the balance right, and it had been very precisely drafted so as not to apply to most mainstream political causes.
Our definition will not affect gender-critical campaigners, those with conservative religious beliefs, trans activists, environmental protest groups, or those exercising their proper right to free speech.
But if this new definition of extremism is so reasonable, so common sense, why are so many people from across the political spectrum so unhappy about it?
I fear that the definition, though well-intentioned, lands in no man's land, not going far enough to tackle the real extremists, not doing enough to protect the non-extremists.
What it is, Madam Deputy Speaker, is a further draconian attempt to continue with their Tory agenda of culture wars.
From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, can the Tories be trusted to tell us what's extreme? Raphael Baer, you're a Guardian columnist. Why does the government say they needed a new definition of extremism? And why now?
Well, there are two answers to that. Why they need one, the government's explanation is that up until now, civil society, charities, different organisations, pressure groups have been engaging with government at various levels. Often it's local government, local councils, but also national government. And some of those organisations have been presenting as moderate, but actually sort of beneath the surface, they are fundamentalist, extremist, ideologically dangerous. And the existing definition of extremism hasn't been adequate to sort of empower government organisations, empower the state to say, hang on, no, we can't deal with you. We're not giving you any grants. We're not working with you. You're the bad guys, essentially. And so that's the sort of the loophole that needs to be closed. And then the more sort of proximate answer is that since October the 7th, and in the context of the war between Israel and Hamas, there has been a great mushrooming of hatred and polarization, racism and extremism, and that in that context, it has become necessary to focus on this a lot more. And that's why we are where we are.
Since October the 7th, there have been those trying to take advantage
of the very human angst that we all feel about the terrible suffering that war brings to the innocent, to women and children, to advance a divisive, hateful ideological agenda.
Now, critics of the government's position will say, also, it's an election year and this is a hot button issue and the government needs to look as if it is doing something. It is getting a handle on this and is moving into this terrain to own it and present itself as being dynamic from a political point of view. But obviously, Michael Gove would deny that that's his motivation.
But Raph, people listening to this might be thinking that extremism is already illegal. If somebody goes out in public and does something fueled by an ideology, that's already banned by the law. So what exactly is the government seeking to do here?
Well, not only is committing terrorist acts obviously illegal, so extremism that manifests itself as violence or incitement to violence has been against the law for a long time, but also organizations that foment and very actively call for the violent overthrow of the country or support extremism are also proscribed. They are banned. And what the government is saying is that the threshold for banning is quite high. Yes, if you're looking at the, as it were, the pool of people who might harbour extremely anti-democratic feelings in their hearts and really want deep down to undermine democracy, they're not acting on it, and nor are they publishing material that meets the legal threshold. They are just sort of out there. You need some additional tier, some additional mechanism to say, well, we want to marginalize and alienate and remove those people from engagement with the state, sort of deny them access to the mainstream because they are basically the bad guys. But we also don't want to lower the threshold for banning things because actually it's a free democratic society. So from that point of view, what they seem to be saying is that we need a sort of a new sort of sub-legal thing that's not a statutory ban, but it's just a very clear way of saying, look, there are a bunch of people who think some things that simply should disqualify them from engagement with government agencies.
So what kinds of groups do we expect will be labelled extreme after this that won't be able to get access to government funding, to consultations, to that sort of thing?
Well, Michael Gove was quite specific actually about this in the chamber. And this comes back to the point that he was very clear about what he wasn't trying to target. Socially conservative organisations or gender critical feminism or trans rights organisations, environmental organisations. He sort of listed all of these essentially secular political pressure groups as things that would definitely not, in his mind, be swept up in this. And so the two areas that he really did single out were the far right, neo-Nazi organisations, and Islamism and Islamist organisations.
Organisations such as the Muslim Association of Britain, which is the British affiliate of the Muslim Brotherhood, and other groups such as CAGE and MEND, give rise to concern for their Islamist orientation and views. We will be holding these and other organisations to account to assess if they meet our definition of extremism, and will take action as appropriate.
And what's interesting about that is when you drill into it, if you take a moment to think about it, he's really only talking about the second one of those, because it's very hard to imagine a local authority or an NHS trust or a government department reaching out to Britain First and saying, you seem to sort of have some sense of what angry white grievance is. Why don't you come and talk to us and we maybe give you a grant and you can do some outreach in the white community, right? That clearly isn't happening and it's never going to happen. So what he's actually talking about, and he was fairly clear about this, is organizations that claim to speak for the Muslim community and claim to express grievance in that community and have been engaged with by police, by NHS trusts, by local government, but that actually, when you dig under the surface of it, have quite extreme radical Islamist ideology at their core. So ultimately, that's who he's talking about.
So was that something that government departments were complaining about? Were they saying, we need you to help us distinguish between groups we can work with and groups that are beyond the pale?
I don't get the impression this was coming much up to the Cabinet Office from other organisations saying, help us with this. I think it was something that was coming from central government looking at cases that had emerged. And Michael Gove, he cited the particular case of an NHS chaplain who had actually sued the BBC for accusing him of being an extremist. And when it came to court, the judge essentially looked at his record, things he'd said, and essentially ruled against him, finding that, yes, actually, you are quite clearly an extremist. And things like that, where under the surface, there are these minor controversies that flare up every now and again, and it has been difficult or controversial to distinguish between organizations that government can engage with, local authorities, whoever it is, schools, for example, and who they shouldn't engage with. Certainly, it's something that Michael Gove has been thinking about, fretting about, worrying about for quite a long time. Remember, he wrote a book in 2006 about Islamism and complacency in the West, and how Western policy, progressive left policy in particular, had incubated an Islamist threat in the UK. So this is something, this is a bit of a hobby horse for Michael Gove.
Okay, so this is a bit of a hobby horse for Michael Gove, a passion project. But when he announced his intention to define extremism, it was very quickly met with a storm of criticism. What were people concerned about?
There are essentially two sorts of categories of objection and reservation. One, I think, is on this specific point about defining Islamism, radical Islam, fundamentalism, this sort of network of terms that can all describe slightly different things, some of which are political ideologies, some of which are sort of, you know, strains of religious belief. And if you are in the business of saying some of these are extreme and fundamentally hostile to democracy, you are in great danger of alienating an awful lot of people who don't have any violent intent or even any particular political intent, certainly don't wake up every day thinking they want to overturn democracy. So it becomes incredibly counterproductive. And all you do is essentially push people away, and you probably expand the pools from which actual extremists will be able to recruit, because you've told an awful lot of Muslims that basically the government thinks you're all extremists.
What I should first say is that, of course, we all want to tackle extremism and we want a safe Britain. But what we feel Michael Gove and this government is doing is playing politics with extremism at the expense of certain communities.
So that's one category of complaint or reservation. The other one is actually about all the other beliefs that might have an extreme or radical end to them. And in that sense, although Michael Gove has said, you know, it's not going to be targeting environmental groups, it's not going to be targeting trans activists or gender critical feminists, people don't trust him and the government on that.
Well, should we trust him and this government on that question?
I think that's not a paranoid response. I mean, ultimately, this is a government that has banned forms of protest specifically targeting essentially environmental groups. They are creating, as part of this new system, what they've called a Center for Excellence in the Cabinet Office, which will sort of work to define more precisely who meets the new category of extremism, who will be sort of on the receiving end of these new controlling, prescribing definitions. And we don't know how that's going to operate. No one really knows by what criteria they will judge it. And there'll be no right of appeal. I mean, you'll be allowed to sort of judicially review it if you find out you've been essentially blacklisted. But ultimately, there's going to be some people in the Cabinet Office. They've got a system and they're going to say X, Y, Z are extremists. And no one really knows, you know, who they are and what they're doing. And crucially, in that respect, when the government says that new definition won't apply more widely or to other organizations, things that, you know, haven't been identified specifically in the Chamber of the House of Commons, they use the word initially. That is, there's quite an explicit acknowledgement that who knows what might happen in the future. And who knows, you know, if they decide that environmentalism has become so radicalized and so extreme that actually now it has to go in the basket of deplorable ideologies alongside Islamism, well, then sure, then this new Center for Excellence in the Cabinet Office might sort of draw a red line through them, and suddenly they're on the wrong side of the guidance. So that's the sort of the broader reservation. Like, what are these powers? Who is wielding these powers? And how far might they go in whose hands? And those are broad, serious democratic reservations that have got nothing to do with Islam or Islamism.
And who was it that was voicing these concerns? Was it broadly what you'd call the usual suspects?
The reservations, interestingly, have come from quite far and wide across the political spectrum. So nearly all civil society actors, I think, respond with caution to this sort of thing. People who are interested in civil liberties, people who are interested in combating Islamophobia and Muslim organizations, they already feel slightly under threat or under pressure from the government, they're going to be suspicious of this new movement, this new policy. So that's unsurprising. What was interesting is that you also have new radical right of the Conservative Party, the socially conservative wing, these people who describe themselves as national conservatives, who often take quite radical social conservative moral positions from an evangelical Christian perspective. So specifically on abortion. But also sometimes on gay rights as well. Interestingly, you had Priti Patel, a former Home Secretary who no one imagined for a second was a liberal or progressive Home Secretary. I think until Suella Braverman became Home Secretary, people thought she was almost certainly the furthest right, most hardline right-wing conservative minister you could imagine in taking a senior cabinet role. And it's only because we had Suella Braverman that that has been eclipsed. And yet she, interestingly, has raised some of these objections as well, specifically on that rather dry technical, but I think absolutely critical point about the powers that are going to be created, where they will sit, who will operate them, and what they might imply in the future.
Coming up, the Tories see increased extremism in British society. Can they see it in their own party?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.
In Norway, a woman's boyfriend forgets who she is overnight. In Detroit, a man is arrested, but he was never at the crime scene. In Spain, disturbing pictures of young girls have appeared, and no one knows who's behind them. Something strange is happening. A collision between people and artificial intelligence. Discover more in The Guardian's new series, Black Box. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes Monday and Thursdays.
Raf, the announcement on Thursday came in a week that's been dominated by a story revealed by The Guardian on Monday about Frank Hester, the Tories' biggest donor, and comments he made a few years ago that seeing the MP Diane Abbott on TV made him want to, quote, hate all black women. And if that wasn't appalling enough, that she should be shot. And on Thursday morning, as Gove was preparing to speak to Parliament, he was being asked about those comments too.
I'm sorry, that's not quite what I asked. Is that an extremist view and would it fall under these new rules, these new definitions of extremism? I can repeat the quote for you if you wish again.
Well, I take these things exceptionally seriously, and because I take them seriously, it would be the case.
Do you think that this new definition of extremism might apply to Frank Hester?
It's astonishing that it took Downing Street so long to call it racist. There's no way of configuring that isn't a self-evidently racist statement. And eventually, obviously, Number 10 did kind of clock that. And unsurprisingly, I think, yeah, because he gave the Conservative Party £10 million, it took them a little bit longer than it should have done. And they are still struggling with what to do about that money. On the point about, you know, whether those statements would fall foul of the new definition of extremism. So if I could sort of, as it were, get into Michael Gove's head for a second, which is not a place I feel tremendously comfortable, but I'll give it a go. I think he would say that actually, although Hester's comments were unpleasant and nasty, they wouldn't meet the definition of extremism or an extreme organization such as these new rules would apply, because you can say awful, terrible things, but that's not the same as having an ideological conviction or representing an organization that is deliberately promoting the undermining of democracy. So he would say, I suppose, that Frank Hester was not, sort of, as it were, reading from a scripture or a text or a manifesto that is out there propagandizing for the killing of Black women. Now, that is a distinction. What's interesting also, though, when he was asked about this in the Commons, the bit that he chose to alight on was more the point about thinking that she should be shot. And he was more forthright about that than others have been. And he, interestingly, because he did say he himself has been targeted, and this is true. So Ali Harbi Ali, who killed Sir David Amess in 2021, had previously scoped out Michael Gove's house. So Michael Gove is well aware of the danger of radicalized extreme people killing MPs. So I got the impression he was quite sincere when he said that that element of it, at least of what Hester said, was properly appalling.
But doesn't this get into the difficulty of trying to define extremism in the way that Gove is doing? Because Hester was being flippant. No one's suggesting he was actually, you know, implying someone should kill Diane Abbott. But there are people out there who do hear similar ideas and take them seriously. I mean, we know that because that's happened more than once in the past decade.
I think you're absolutely right. This is the precise problem, is the imprecision of the line between violent rhetoric, violent language that sort of normalizes a kind of aggressive culture, and then ideological conviction that will persuade people that they have a sacred duty to go and commit acts of violence. So at some point, there is a line or a boundary, but my sense is that that's a line that exists inside the heads of certain people. It's a kind of a fuse that blows where you think, I'm angry and I'm going to do something about it, and I'm feeling victimized. And actually, the correct response, you know, here is this set of beliefs that tells me that actually it's my duty to go and strike back at the enemy. And the enemy is, for example, an MP, which is what happened with Ali Harbi Ali, who killed David Amess. It's also what happened with Thomas Mayer, who killed Joe Cox. Thomas Mayer killed Joe Cox essentially because he believed that she was part of a conspiracy largely to flood Britain with racially impure migrants, and he was a white supremacist and he wanted to do something about that. But also, he chose her as his target because she was campaigning on the Remain side in the referendum. And also, the referendum campaign had whipped everything into such a tumult of anger and rage and frustration that it's not impossible to think that actually, although he obviously had all sorts of violent ideations and was clearly an extremist, something in the climate of that referendum at that moment, just a couple of weeks before polling day, pushed him over the edge. Mm. And interestingly, the one of the senior police officers who investigated the murder of Joe Cox said exactly that. He said he thought that Thomas Mayer's actions were in part an expression of the radicalized political climate that was around at that time. So it's very hard to draw the line that Michael Gove seems to think he can draw.
It sounds like, Raph, the point here is that the wider context is that politics in the UK has become much coarser over the past few years. We've seen just recently Lee Anderson claiming Sadiq Khan is in league with Islamists, Suella Braverman claiming anti-war protesters in London are hateful or supportive of Hamas, that people look at Michael Gove standing up claiming he wants to tackle extremism and feel that there's a hypocrisy there when his own party has contributed to the undermining of British values and of community cohesion itself.
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable criticism of Michael Gove's position right now that he is standing representing a government that has indulged incredibly violent rhetoric, essentially. I mean, going back to 2016 and Brexit, when it was completely normal for people on the more hard Brexit end of the debate, including people who ended up in the cabinet, including Boris Johnson, who became prime minister, to describe Remainers as traitors, people who are betraying the country, surrendering to foreigners. You had a lot of talk about Quislings. That's an incredibly extreme position. And then if you layer on top of that, the fact that in order to pursue some of those policies, you have this very government that has done things that are quite obviously corrosive of the fundamental principles of liberal democracy that Michael Gove was defending in the chamber of the House of Commons today, such as dissolving parliament when you don't like what it's going to do. I mean, Boris Johnson literally said, I'm fed up with MPs thwarting my will on Brexit, so I'm basically going to prorogue the House. Right, you know, as we speak, there is legislation going through the Lords that has already passed the Commons, by which the government essentially says, although the Supreme Court has ruled as a matter of fact that Rwanda is not a safe country, because the government still wants to be able to send people to Rwanda, and it's awkward if it's not a safe country for that purpose, we will just decree by government fiat that it is a safe country. We will invent, choose our own facts, and those facts will trump, and I use that word advisedly, trump what the Supreme Court has ruled as a matter of fact. That also self-evidently corrosive of certain principles of the rule of law and liberal democracy.
And so if there is this threat to British democracy, if it's being undermined, the call may be coming from inside the House.
I certainly think that if you were sincere about protecting the values of British democracy, the place to start would be thinking, is British democracy operating in a way that allows everyone to feel included, that gives everyone necessary opportunities, is genuinely representative? Now, some of that is an economic question. And I think one of the reasons the Conservatives are in difficulty now is because people don't feel the society generally is giving them opportunity and inclusion because the economy is in such bad shape. But some of it is about just respecting the institutions, the basic rules, the pillars of the democracy. And it is clear that there is a significant faction of the Conservative Party that looks at what's happened in America, looks at Donald Trump, can see that a certain type of radical populism that really doesn't respect the norms of democracy. It's a faction of the Conservative Party that quite likes the flavour of that kind of conservatism, you know, which is obviously corrosive of liberal democracy, and can't wait to basically get out of government so they can capture the Conservative Party and make that the mainstream right of British politics. And yes, so in that sense, the extremism is being incubated through rot at the centre and tiny fringe organisations are calling for the overthrow of the government or calling for a caliphate or calling for a white supremacist dictatorship. They are pretty small fry in this.
Raphael Baer, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that was Raphael Baer, a Guardian columnist and leader writer whose work can be found at theguardian.com, along with all our reporting on the Tory donor Frank Hester and on Michael Gove's extremism statement yesterday. Before we go, The Guardian has a new podcast series out called Black Box. It's about artificial intelligence and us, the way this mysterious new technology is colliding with humanity for the first time, with surprising and pretty extraordinary results. This week's episodes are about people who fall in love with AI and the potential for AI to transform the way we identify and treat diseases. And on that theme, The Guardian's tech editor, Alex Hearn, writes a brilliant weekly newsletter all about the way technology is shaping our lives. It's funny, approachable, and often unexpected. It's called Techscape, and you can find it by searching Guardian Techscape, signing up, and it'll land in your inbox each week. And that is it for today. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent, along with George McDonough and Nima Job. Sound design was by Solomon King. The executive producer was Elizabeth Casson, and we're back with you tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.